The third parak goes on to further define what is considered one field, one sadeh, so only one peah is obligated, or multiple fields upon which each would require peah. Mishnah Aleph says as follows, Malbenos hatfua shebena zesim, if we have patches, literally squares, but it could be strips of grain planted in between olive trees. So do the olive trees act as a break or not? Beit Shammai Omri, Peah Mikol Echad V'Echad. Beit Shammai says, in fact, yes, they act as a mechitza, and you have to give peah from each and every strip, each and every patch of tfuah, of grain. Beis Hillel Omri, Me'echad Alakol, you only have to give from one patch on all of the grain planted there, because the trees do not act as a division. Umodim and Afilu Beis Shammai, even Beis Shammai would agree in a situation, Shim Hayu Roshe Shuas Muravim, that those patches in one place were all connected. For example, they run north to south in a field, and either on the east side or west side, they're all attached by an additional strip. In that situation, Shunos and Peah Me'echad Alakol, there you would only give one Peah on everything, even according to Beis Shammai. Mishnah Beis, Haminamer et Sadehu, somebody who is now picking, harvesting the field in patches, which means that he cuts only the ripe produce first, the ripe grain, and then he's going to go back and take a second stab at it. And the question here is this considered two harvests? That if it's considered two harvests, he would have to give, when he gets back to it, the patches of the field that he did not initially harvest, he'd have to leave a peah in each and every patch? Or is this viewed as just simply one elongated harvest? He started at one time, he harvested what was right, and he's going to go back and harvest the patches that he left over, and that's a continuation, and you'd only have to give one peah on all the fields. So Haminamer Tzadehu, somebody who does it in patches. Namer is from the word Namer. Haminamer is Namer, a leopard, because he's making it look like the patches of a leopard, because he's leaving patches that he did not yet harvest. That Tzadehu v'shir kalachim lachim, and he leaves over the things that are not ripe yet. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Nose Peah Mikol Echad V'Echad. Rabbi Akiva is of the view that each of those patches is going to be a separate harvest. They're each a separate sadeh now, and when you go back, it's not a continuation of the first harvesting. Then accordingly, you have to leave a peah for each patch. V'chachamim orvi me'echad alakol, you simply have to leave peah over in one patch for the rest of them. Umodim chachamim l'Rabbi Akiva, chachamim would agree with Rabbi Akiva in the following situation, bezorei sheves or chardal, that somebody who plants dill or mustard seed that would typically be planted separately in patches in a field, bishlosha makoma, two places, three places, four places, patches, shunos en peah mikol echa ve'echa, that you would have to leave a peah for each of them, because that's the normal way that they're planted in separate areas. Mishnah gimel hamachalik betzalim, here we have a situation that we are getting a little bit more complicated, that we are going to divide up the field between what is ripe and not ripe, amachlik betzalim lachim l'shuk, and we're going to have different uses for them. So it's not only that we are taking two stabs and we have a question, is this one harvest or two harvests, but we are harvesting the same field, the same produce at two different times and for two different uses. So it says as follows, amachlik betzalim lachim l'shuk, the ones that are wet, we send them off to shuk. In other words, they're ripe, but they're still wet. We send them off to the shuk for sale, and we wait on the rest until they dry out, and that's what we need to send it into storage. So accordingly, because we are harvesting them for two different purposes, we would have to give two different payas. It's just like having two varieties of wheat that we discussed previously in the prior perek. This is just like having two varieties of betzalim, of onions, because we're using them for different purposes. And the same would apply v'chein ba'apunim, for chickpeas, if we harvest at different times for different purposes, v'chein bekerem, and the same thing would apply with grapes, if we have two stages in the harvest and we use it for different purposes. One gets sold off immediately and one we let dry and we send it off to storage. However, hamedal, if somebody simply has too much growing in the field and needs to trim down from unripe produce, so he gets rid of some so there's room for the rest to grow. No se mina mashura al mashashir. He doesn't have to worry about what he trimmed down. It was unripe. He simply has to give peya on what he had left in the field in the amount of 1/60th of what he had left. You don't have to include what you trimmed out from what was unripe. And getting back to the ratio, when we talked about hamachalik, you're dividing up, harvesting it, and we talked about harvesting it at two different times for two different purposes. How about if you harvest it at two different times, but for the same purpose? Hamachalik ma'achasyan. In other words, he harvests the same type of produce. You have a wheat field, you have a barley field, and you simply are going to harvest it two different stages, but for the same purpose. They're both going to go to the shuk, or they're both going to go to shorage. In that situation, nosin mina mashur ala kol, you will simply have to give once what you have, when you're done harvesting, that's when you leave, but you have to give for both stages of the harvesting. Mishnah Dalet talks about when somebody leaves onions in the ground, and you have to leave onions, if you want to produce seeds from onions, you have to leave them in the ground for a long period of time. Those onions become somewhat inedible. They don't taste very good. You could eat it in an emergency, but you really wouldn't want to. So hayimanos shel betzalim, the mothers of the betzalim, you're leaving it to produce seed, to be a mother. Chayavos bepeya, so according to the Tanakhama, you have to give pay on that because it is edible, even if it's just in an emergency. Rabbi Yossi Poter, Rabbi Yossi says, but you wouldn't want to eat it. It really doesn't taste very good. You don't have to give pay from it. Mal benos habetzalim shebein ayarak. We're talking about normal onions now that you planted them in a field in patches, and between them, in the rows between them, you planted other vegetables. So do those other vegetables act as a mechitza, such that you have to give on each of the patches of onions a separate peah? Rabbi Yossi Omer, peah mikol echad, you have to give a separate peah on each of the patches because the vegetables that you planted in between them act as a mechitza. Each patch now is its own sadeh, has its own peah requirement. V'chachamim armi me'echad ala kol, because the vegetables that are planted intervening, they typically would plant stuff that would not last in storage, and the betzalim can easily last in storage for a long amount of time. So those other vegetables are insignificant compared to the onions, and they would not act as a mechitza between the onions. You just have to give one peah for all the onions, for all the patches together. Mishnah, hey, if we have two brothers that you receive a Yerusha, as long as the field is together, it has a chiyuv of one peah. However, ha'achim shechalku, once they divide up the Yerusha, they take a field, for example, and divide it up into two, those are two separate fields, nosim shtei peahs, they each have a separate peah obligation on their half of the field. It's now their own fields. Chazu v'nishtafu, if thereafter they partner together and they join forces, and that field now legally becomes one between them, nosnim peachas. Once again, they would only have one pay obligation because they've partnered together. Shnaim shalachu et ha'ilan, nosnim peachas. The same would be if two partner together and buy a specific tree, they only have an obligation to leave peah one time from that tree. Lakach zetz fon of zedroma. However, if we have two people, they didn't partner together, and one purchases one side of the tree, one part purchases the south side, the north side of the tree, and one purchases the south side of the tree. So it's a tree that is not jointly owned by them as partners. They own it separately as non-partners. Accordingly, zen nosen pei ala atzma, v'zen nosen pei ala atzma. Each one is going to have a pay obligation on his half of the tree. Hamocher kilche ilan besof sandeo. We have somebody who has a field and he sells off saplings that purchasers are required to remove, and they're going to plant it elsewhere. In this situation, the buyer is obligated, no sen peah mikol echa ve'echa. The buyer is required to plant, to give peah on each tree separately. The buyer did not buy any land, so there's no land that is going. So each tree is viewed as its own sod, as its own field, and each has a separate peah obligation. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda qualifies for this. Bisman shloshir balasad. That's the situation when the owner of the field did not keep any of these tree saplings for himself. We're talking about, by the way, when these tree saplings all have fruit on that. He didn't keep any for himself, so the purchaser or purchasers are required to give peah from each tree sapling that they purchase. Aval im shir balasad. However, if the owner of the field maintains ownership of a sapling, and the situation is such that he started harvesting before he sold off those other saplings, so because he started harvesting, that kicks in his obligation for peah. And even when he sells off the saplings to others, he's the one who owns the land and he keeps one for himself, He is obligated in pay for everything that he sold off. Who knows, and pay ala kol, he has to get pay on what he retains for himself and what he sold off, because he started harvesting and that kicked in the pay obligation on him for everything that was in the field. Now, Mishnah Vav talks about how big a field is, or how small a field is obligated in pay. And we're going to see five different opinions going in reverse order of size, from the largest requirement of the field to the smallest. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Karka Beis Rova Chayeves Bepeya. If you have a field that you can plant a fourth of a kav of seed in, that's approximately 104 square meters, that's the minimum that would obligate Peya. Less than that would not be obligated in Peya. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, next opinion, number two, Ha'oseh Sa'asayim. You look at the yield, and if a field can produce two Sa'ah of seed, that is obligated in Peya. Less would not be. Number three, Rabbi Tarpon Omer, Shishal Shisha Tfachim. If it's 6x6 Tefach, it's obligated. Number four, Rabbi Yehuda Ben Maaseh Omer, Kedei Liksor V'lishnos. If you have enough produce to hold the grains in your fist, and then you can reap it, that's Kedei Liksor Lishna, and you have to do it again. In other words, two fistfuls of stalks, that is the minimum amount to obligate one in a peah. The halacha kidvarav, and the Mishnah says we paskin like him. In fact, we don't paskin halacha lamaisa like him. We paskin like Rabbi Akiva. Number five, Rabbi Akiva Omer, karka kolshu chayeves bepeah. Any small amount of field, as long as it can grow one stalk of grain, then we have an obligation of peah on whatever can grow on that field, a tiny amount. And not only does it apply to peah, that even a tiny amount of ground, but the same thing applies for bikurim. If there's a farmer that grows even one of the seven minim, even a tiny amount on a tiny amount of land, he is going to be chayav. These are talking about the Sheva Medium that Eretz Yisrael is praised for. He has a mitzvah of Bikurim to bring them to the Beis HaMikdash. And in addition, Melichtov Aleha Pruzbol. Pruzbol is the document that's given to the Beis Din for Beis Din before Shemitah, so that a loan is not wiped out, canceled by Shemitah. And it requires that the lender have a tiny amount of land. The way that works is because when you hand that over, that Pruzbol document written by the lender over to the Beis Din, effectively the Beis Din has a mortgage to which the loan is attached. So any small amount of land that the borrower has, that would be sufficient to make the Pruzbol effective. And last, Veliknos Ima Nechasim She'en Lam Achrayut, in order to transfer ownership of movable property, Bekesib Ushtar B'Chazaka, these three types of kinyanim that only work for real property, for land. If somebody is buying both real property and movable property, you can acquire the movable property, even though it typically requires a kinyan hagbah. But if you're also buying real property that is bought with kesef shtar chazaka, you can acquire both at the same time through kesef shtar and chazaka. Mishnah Zayin, we're going to continue giving examples, Mishnah Zayin, Mishnah Ches, of things that only require a tiny amount of property. This may be real property. It may also include movable property. So Akosiv Nachasiv Shchiv Meira, if somebody is a Shchiv Meira, he's about to pass away, he's very seriously ill, and he gives away his property. And then he has a Refuah Shleima, he gets better, and he wants to reclaim, give me my property back, I was giving it away just because I thought I would die, and I didn't, so I want my property back. So Shir Karka Kolshua, if he left for himself, when he granted the gift, he maintained ownership in even a tiny amount of land. That's what we're talking about. Even a tiny amount of land or non-land, movable assets. His matana is a matana. He cannot reclaim that gift back, as we see here that he did not give anything, everything away. He maintained something. So he had a thought, maybe I'm not going to pass away. Accordingly, he was serious about the gift. When he gets better, he cannot say, give me my gift back. Lo shir karka kolshu, if he didn't maintain anything for himself, and he gets better in that situation, his matana that I give, he can reclaim it because he can validly say, I was just giving it away because I thought I would die and maintain nothing for myself, and now that I feel better, I want my gift back. Next example of even a tiny amount of property which would be sufficient, Hakosev Nechasu Levanov, if somebody, it's a machlokas, if we're talking about a Shchiv Meira or not here, he before death gives away his property to his children, and including when he's giving away his property, the kasav liisht or karka kolshu, he gives even a tiny amount of karka to his wife, and it's less than the value that she would have received on her ksuba, ibda ksuba, so she loses her ksuba because she was silent, not saying, I'd prefer to take my ksuba. She was silent, she received the gift, so she can only get that small gift, and she loses the right to ksuba. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi goes even more extreme. We don't pass on the Rabbi Yossi. In kibla la, even if she agreed to be included in general receiving a part of the gift with the sons, afal pish lo kasavla, even if the husband who's about to pass away didn't give a specific gift to her, that would be sufficient. Ibda ksuba, so she loses her ksuba because she did not speak up at the time saying, I want to maintain my right to get paid my ksuba. Mishnah Ches, the last example of something that even a tiny amount of property would suffice, a kosev nechasev la'avdo, if somebody is writing all of his assets away as a gift to his non-Jewish slave, including the non-Jewish slave himself. So he's giving the non-Jewish slave ownership in himself. If that's the case, the Yatzal ben Chorin, he goes free, because effectively you're giving ownership of somebody, of a slave to himself, you're setting him free. Shir Karka Kolshu, however, if the person giving the gift to his non-Jewish slave maintain even a small amount of an asset, here we have, be it a real estate or non, Lo Yatzal ben Chorin, the Tanakam is of the view that this non-Jewish slave does not go free, because we can make the claim that he, just like he wanted to maintain a little bit of an asset for himself, he wanted to maintain ownership of that slave. And if he maintains that slave, he doesn't go free. And also the gift is not affected, because Masha Kana Evid Kana Rabo, the Evid, a non-Jewish slave, has no ability to own anything. Everything is owned by the owner. So if he doesn't go free, he doesn't own any assets. Rabbi Shimon Omer Lolam Hu Ben Chori. Rabbi Shimon disagrees. He says if you're signing over everything but excluding specific assets, and the Evid is not included in those specific assets, the person is intending to give everything else to the Evid, including himself. But Rabbi Shimon says if the gift is to be he gives away a gift of assets, but he excludes something that's not specified. It's if you exclude something that's specified and the Evid is not included in that list, then it's a bona fide gift to the Evid and he goes free. But if you say, I'm giving you my assets, and you say, I'm excluding something, and you don't say what that something is, we can therefore say that is the exclusion, is the Evid himself. The Evid doesn't go free. If he doesn't go free, the gift is not affected. So Rabbi Shimon Omer, just a little seed inside, Le'olam Hu Ben Chorin, based on the prior, he would be setting free because he didn't exclude the Evid, Ad Shi Omer, until the master says as follows, Hare Kol Nechasai, Nisunim Li'ishploni Avdi, I'm giving all of my assets away to my Evid, my Jewish, non-Jewish Evid, Chutz, Mi'echad Miribo Shem, with the exclusion of 1/10,000 of my assets, because he didn't specify what that 1/10,000 that he's retaining for himself, we can easily say that is intending to be the slave himself that he's not setting free. And if the slave is not set free, he doesn't go free, and he also cannot receive the gift, because Masha Kana Evid Kana Rabo, the Rav, the owner, owns everything that the Evid would otherwise have owned.